But we are taking a look at wisdom this summer, and we have been taking a look at this and the books of the Old Testament that give voice to the idea of the Hebrew word. Does anybody remember what the Hebrew word for wisdom is? Chokmah. Chokmah, right? Chokmah in Hebrew. Wisdom, the noun wisdom, the verb to be wise. And there are three books in the Old Testament that we've been looking at, three books in the Old Testament that account for over 60% of the uses of those terms. Hakam, Chokmah, wisdom. And those three books are Proverbs, Job, and Ecclesiastes. And so they have earned the moniker of wisdom literature. And we talked about this idea of wisdom. What is wisdom? It's not just gray hair and beards and heads full of knowledge. Wisdom is about putting God's rules to work in this world. And so you're not just wise in thought, but you're a craftsman and you're wise. You're a plumber and you're wise. We have a lot of wise plumbers in here, right? You know how to get things done. You're a woodworker. You're wise in the way of woodworking. Even if you're like a salesman or an accountant, like there's wisdom. There are better and worse ways of doing things. And when you find the right way, a good way, an effective way of doing something, you have tapped into Chokmah, God's wisdom in this world. And there's probably things that we all find ourselves wise at. We might not necessarily think about it in that way, but this idea of asking the question, all of these books ask the question, like, what kind of a world are we living in? What does it look like to live well in this world? How do we navigate in God's world in a skillful way with all of the blessings and the challenges that come with living in this world? And so we started with Proverbs. Proverbs is what we call conventional wisdom. If you do the right thing, it will go well for you. If you don't do the right thing, it will bring you to ruin. Like, that's conventional wisdom. Proverbs, and Proverbs, if Proverbs had a persona to it, Proverbs is like a skilled teacher, a skilled young teacher teaching young students the ways of the world, the right way of doing things. It's orientation. It's this skilled young teacher coming out, and Proverbs knows a lot about everything, whether it's money or sex or relationship or work or spirituality or power. Proverbs knows weighty things about all of these things. Proverbs is training, and this really skilled young teacher sets us in motion in the book of Proverbs. And the more we get into life, and as we kind of go through our elementary years, and we make it to middle school, maybe we make it to high school, we remember our Proverbs, but we also realize that Proverbs has taken us only so far. And maybe you're at that point where you're like, hey, I've done all the right things, but maybe it hasn't paid off, or I've done some of the wrong things, and I've kind of skirted justice on those things. And what we find is that the more we get into life, the more we see that Proverbs is true, but we also see that there's a lot of exceptions to the formulas, that Proverbs is not promises, Proverbs is about principles. And the righteous do not always prosper. Sometimes the righteous encounter pain, hardship, illness, grief. Even a right relationship with God does not make us immune to these pains. Cue Job. Now, if Proverbs is a young, skilled teacher, Job is like a grizzled grandpa who has been through it, right? So Job comes and brings this kind of sage wisdom that says, sometimes we suffer through no fault of our own, that we have enemies on this earth and accusers in the heavenly realms, and we live in a world that has fallen, and Job takes us and sits us around the campfire and tells the tale of both trust and complaint, the wise path through those things. So we have the young, skilled teacher in Proverbs that is teaching us what is right and wrong, but we have Grandpa Job who's going to tell us the stuff we hadn't learned early on, the stuff maybe we wouldn't understand, the stuff that our parents said, you'll understand one day when you're an adult. right? That's what Grandpa Job starts to do. And so today we have another wisdom literature book. And if Proverbs is a skilled young teacher, and Job is Grandpa Job, Ecclesiastes is the dark, brooding, middle-aged cynic. Why am I pointing at myself, right? This is someone who has a sharp wit and a sharp word and is, yeah, that's true, but let me tell you what I know or what I've seen or what I've observed. And so like Job, Ecclesiastes is in a conversation with Proverbs. Job was in a conversation with Proverbs. The righteous prosper, the wicked perish. And Job says, well, that's not always the case. And Ecclesiastes is also in some kind of conversation with Proverbs. The righteous prosper and the wicked are brought to ruin. But Ecclesiastes says, it may make a difference in this life, but both the righteous and the wicked are destined for the grave. All right. So I've been trying to figure out how to make this lighter, everybody. Because Ecclesiastes is dark, and it could go to dark places. So today I just want to look a little bit at Ecclesiastes, see what is it and why, how has it nourished the church and people of faith, or even people not of faith, over the years. Okay? So let me see if I can redeem a little bit. Maybe you're like, I love Ecclesiastes. How many people in here love Ecclesiastes? You love it? Great. How many people in here, you're like, Ecclesiastes is like the pages of my Bible that stick together because I don't open it up? All right? A little dark. Fair enough. I got you. Okay, a little bit of background about just the cultural relevance of the book of Ecclesiastes. It's often considered one of the most enigmatic books of the Bible. I would just say this. Scholars have no agreement on who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, what it's about, or how to even organize the book of Ecclesiastes. So it's a little bit of an enigma all around, okay? It has had, however, in culture, broad appeal, especially in the literary world, okay? Ernest Hemingway, his famous book, based in Pamplona, The Sun Also Rises. We had that read this morning. That line, that's based on a line from Ecclesiastes, and it's post-World War I, where it was supposed to be the war that ended all war. There was so much devastation, so much destruction, and then he writes this book about Pamplona and betrayal and love, but the sun will rise the next day. No matter how much destruction humans can bring on the world, no matter how much deception and betrayal happens, the sun will also rise. Hemingway knew it. Hemingway loved Ecclesiastes. I don't know if that's not exactly a commercial for Ecclesiastes, but maybe John Grisham is more your thing, right? John Grisham, A Time to Kill, which is a story about the difficulty of walking through the hardest times and watching a trial and then wanting to take someone's life, A Time to Kill, injustice. Edith Wharton writes The House of Mirth. Anybody? House of Mirth? All right. A little bit of background on House of Mirth. A woman, Lily Barton, is on a search for love and luxurious living. The title comes from, Ecclesiastes 7:4, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of the fool is in the house of mirth. And she titles her book, The House of Mirth. I wonder what's going to happen to Lily Barton here. Anyway, Herman Melville loved Ecclesiastes. Moby Dick, Ecclesiastes, chasing after the wind, chasing after what is unattainable. Thomas Wolfe, Henry James writes a book, The Golden Bowl, which is from Ecclesiastes 12:6. I don't know if I've hit anybody in here with any of these titles. The 90s, early 2000s, the movie Gattaca. Anybody? Gattaca? Gen Xers, where are we at this morning, okay? Gattaca, the line, it's about genetic modifications are rampant all over humanity, and your genetic profile determines what occupation you have. And it's about someone who does not have a genetic occupational affinity for space travel trying to make that happen, okay? Anyway, all that to say, the movie begins with a quote from Ecclesiastes 7:13. Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? Now, you're like, all of this to say is for some reason Ecclesiastes has made its way into the language of literature, and those who are looking at life, they have seemed to find some kind of truth in the book of Ecclesiastes. Groundhog Day, everybody. Are we finally on the same page? All right. Groundhog Day is a reflection on Ecclesiastes. There's nothing new under the sun. And over time, he goes from this Bill Murray, right? I had a spoiler alert, everybody, okay? But he learns to love the repetition of the same day over and over, that he actually goes from despair to joy in there's nothing new under the sun, making the most of it, appreciating the goodness and the small things. As a professor, especially in seminary, I don't know why this is, but seminarians seem to love the book of Ecclesiastes. And I think part of it, my students and seminarians, I think the idea that it questions, sometimes we live in an evangelical world where we try to answer questions with bumper stickers, right? Or Facebook posts or Instagram posts. We try to get kind of a cute Hobby Lobby decoration with a quote on it. And we try to make that answer all of our questions. And I think there's a little bit of those who are a little bit tired of the triteness of bumper sticker explanations that have gone to Ecclesiastes and found something of depth, have found something that actually, in a weird way, nurtures our soul by actually taking dark Uncle Ecclesiastes, right? Kind of this darker, brooding, middle-aged dude, Unc, right? Unc Ecclesiastes. All right, see, only some people know what we're talking about here. But all this to say, and I also think, in seminary, we always quoted Ecclesiastes 12:12, of making many books there is no end, and much study is weariness of the flesh. There you go, that's my life verse. That's all right. All right, so let's open up to Ecclesiastes. Let's ask some basic questions about this book and see what it might have to offer us. We're going to be kind of an introduction this week. We'll look a little bit more in depth next week. And then the week after that, we're going to kind of bring it all together about all of our wisdom literature together. But what is Ecclesiastes? And just to talk through this. But the first thing, if we look at Ecclesiastes 1:1, it's 1:1, it says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. You might have a translation that says the words of the teacher. You might have a translation that doesn't have either the preacher or the teacher. It might just have the Hebrew word Koheleth in there. Does anybody have a translation that just says the words of Koheleth? Okay, there you go. See, the word Koheleth in Hebrew, it simply means the speaker who stands in front of the assembly. The speaker, so whoever this person was whose words have been collected, by the way, one of the things about this book is there's an author of the book who has compiled the words of this man, Koheleth, the speaker. And so you have an author of the book, and we'll see him at the very beginning and the very end, and in the middle are all these collected thoughts of this person, the speaker, the teacher, the preacher, Koheleth. When you translate Koheleth into Greek, the word Koheleth is the word Ecclesiastes. And so Ecclesiastes is a person. It is the speaker, the teacher. Okay, so that's no extra charge for that, and you're like, all right, let's get into some other stuff that I care about. Okay, so if there is a traditional view of who, you're even like, I don't even know if this is what I care about. If there's a traditional view on who this person is, Koheleth, the preacher, the teacher, Ecclesiastes, who is this person? If there's a traditional view, it is that this is the person Solomon. And that's from a literal reading of the very beginning of the book, the words of Koheleth, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. And the quintessential son of David is Solomon. Now, at the same time, it's pretty much unlikely that Solomon is the author of the book. He might be Koheleth, but he's not the author. The author has collected a lot of these sayings. And so whether this is Solomon or someone who came after Solomon, another king, or just a wise person who gathers these things together, we don't know. What we do know is a little bit of a profile. Okay, now remember that we talked about, we've got Proverbs, we got this teacher, and that when we were over with Job, Job was described as a blameless and upright man who fears the Lord and turns away from evil. And that is a description of the Proverbs guy. The guy who does all of Proverbs, Job was that guy. Now, Ecclesiastes, what we're going to find out is Ecclesiastes is also a Proverbs guy, but he's the Proverbs guy who has collected all the Proverbs. And he does live them out, but here we go. Look at 113. 113. Whoever this is, it's another Proverbs guy. 113. And I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. Okay? So this guy is... In Hebrew, the word is that he is a hakam, a wise man. Okay? So he is not a wise guy. He might be a little bit of a wise guy, but a wise man. 117, I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. So he is someone who has looked around. He's seen all the Proverbs. Look, if you flip to the very end of the book, 12:9. Look at 12:9, all the way to the end. You're like, you're singing my tune, because when we get to Ecclesiastes, I just want to get to the end of it, right? Okay, 12:9. It says, besides being wise, the preacher, Ecclesiastes, Koheleth, also taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. The preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. So this person, this Koheleth, he's a Proverbs guy in the sense that he has gathered, he may be one of the persons who compiled portions of the book of Proverbs. And there's different people who compile different Proverbs in the book of Proverbs. And so he's one of those guys. He's a Proverbs guy. And so again, Proverbs, then you have Job and Ecclesiastes, and they're both in some kind of conversation with Proverbs. They're both Proverbs guys. And they have something to say about what they have been raised on and what they have heard. And this brings us back to this idea of that as Ecclesiastes, Koheleth, as he is weighing all of this proverbial wisdom, he has one word for us. After compiling all of these proverbs, and after living them out, and after watching all of this happen, and watch people be training their children and living according to these things, he has one word for us. There you go. And we have an alert that it has arrived. Ecclesiastes 1:2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, Koheleth. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, here's the thing. Nobody really agrees on how to translate this word or what it means. So the ESV, the New Revised Standard, and the NASB, they all say vanity of vanities. Hands up if you've got a translation that says vanity of vanities. NIV says what Ash said a few weeks ago in a great British accent. Meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. How many people have a meaningless out there? Okay, I see that hand. Common English Bible says pointless, pointless, perfectly pointless. That's a good one. It's got a lot of, it's got pop, you know. It's got the alliteration too. The New Jerusalem Bible says futility, sheer futility. This was one I wanted to hear from the message because I love Eugene Peterson. God rest his soul. He translated it this way. Smoke. Nothing but smoke. There's nothing to anything. It's all smoke. That's the message, Eugene. Ah, I love Eugene. The word in Hebrew, this is the one word. After all this time, after compiling all these proverbs, after living this out and watching people train their children and watching what happens, this is what the word, the Koheleth says. The word in Hebrew is the word hevel. Say hevel. Hevel. It's H-E-V-E-L. You could put a little ch on the front if you want, because it is Hebrew. Hevel, okay? Hevel. Hevel, what is Hevel? It's so difficult, and there's so many different aspects to this, and part of it is we don't know all the nuances of it. This is what Hevel is, okay? And in order to know what Hevel is, I have to tell you a story. When I went from third grade to fourth grade, it was a big transition in my life, and one of the main things of that transition was that when I hit fourth grade, I was able to ride my bike to school, okay? I lived about a mile and a half away from my school. You had to go over the train tracks, over this thing, but I got to ride to school. And I did it with my brother. My brother is one grade ahead of me, and so we would, in the morning, what we would do, we would leave. I still remember, we would leave at 7:15, we'd open the garage, bike locks on the bike, you know, our little BMX bikes. You guys, you know, thank you very much. It is the 80s, okay? And so we're riding, but when we open the garage, we pull our bikes out, one of the things that would happen is on a really cold day, when you breathed out, you could see your breath. And we thought this was the coolest thing in the world. I remember I was like, riding my bike to school was an adventure. Like, it was this mark of freedom. And now it was like this super adventure. Like, I can see my breath. And as I'm riding, I'm like breathing out and I can see my breath. And you guys know this. Like, sometimes when it's cold but not super cold, you have to like breathe out like hot breath. But when it's really cold and you just blow out, you can see your breath. You guys have been in that kind. I know some of the Wisconsin people, they've seen their breath many times. Us California people, this is a novelty. And as a 10-year-old kid, a 9-year-old kid, this was awesome. This was amazing. This was beautiful. You got to breathe out and see it. Now, you're like, what does this have to do with Hevel? The word Hevel literally means breath. It also means smoke or vapor. And what the author, or what Koheleth is saying here, what Ecclesiastes is saying, is that me on a cold day breathing out your breath, you can see your breath. You can almost reach out and grab your breath, but it disappears. It's something, and it's kind of beautiful and enigmatic, hard to understand, and then it disappears. Beautiful, but it disappears. Fleeting. And that's what Ecclesiastes says, that is what life is like. And he says in Hebrew, it's beautiful in Hebrew, he says, Hevel Hevelim, says Koheleth. Hevel Hevelim, everything is Hevel. Five times. There's something, and you can imagine the way you go with Hevel. Is it the beauty or the enigma, or is it the disappearance and the fleeting nature of it? You could go, and this is how interpreters go, you could go in any direction with that, and it can end up, the book of Ecclesiastes can end up with joy and beauty, but it can also end up with meaninglessness and even despair. And the book of Ecclesiastes really turns on this one word, Hevel. Your breath on a cold day, beautiful, adventurous, but gone as quickly as it came. So this week, I'll just, this is self-report time. This week, I've been in like a funk, like a little bit of a funk. I don't know, maybe it's August, like it's the dog days of August. Is anybody else feeling the dog days of August? Not even hot, it's just like we're coming to the end of something, like we're right in between. Like, I don't know what it is. I wish all the school districts could just get all on the same page, because it's like 3 weeks of starting school. It's just this period of like nothingness, right? Some people are starting, some people have already started, some people are still on vacation, like all of this stuff, right? You guys know, my teacher friends, I see you, I appreciate you, dog days. I don't know what it is, but I'm kind of in a funk. I'm not on my game. I don't know what it is. I don't even know what it is. And I was talking about this with Kelly, and Kelly says, hey, she said, you know, you have been doing this wisdom thing all summer, and it's a little bit heavy. Like, it's a little bit, and if you're like marinating in that every day, it can get in there. And I think that is one of the things about Ecclesiastes. This guy, the guy in Ecclesiastes, has kind of marinated in this Hevel idea for quite a while. And it's kind of like put him into a little bit of back and forth. And I think for me, there is this sense of enigma, beautiful, mysterious, but fleeting. And you can go dark or you can find joy in this. And I think as we think about this book, one of the things we want to look at. So we talked about who is this? This is Koheleth. This is the preacher, the gatherer of people, the giver of wisdom. But he's Proverbs, but. And there is some wisdom, even some beauty in the yes, but. I love sarcasm. I feel like if it were listed as a spiritual gift, that would be my thing, little sarcasm. Okay, some of you guys do sarcasm really well. Some of you guys do cynicism really well. Like, you watch a good comedian. Sometimes the best comedians are super cynical, right? There's a lot that can be gained from sarcasm and cynicism and satire. There's good comedy in this sort of thing. But there is a limit to the brooding, middle-aged Ecclesiastes. There's a limit. And part of that limit is, Ecclesiastes by nature is a critic. All cynics, they need something to react against. And that is, for Ecclesiastes, as a critic, he has to criticize Proverbs. And for the critic, and this is one of the things about, sometimes critics can have really good insights, but sometimes you look at critics and you're like, the only reason you exist is because of someone else's work, right? And so critics, though they might have something thoughtful to say, they cannot build for themselves a world worth living in. And so at some point, Ecclesiastes turns us back over to Proverbs to say, at some point we have to build something. At some point we have to have conviction to move in a direction and not just say yes, but. And Ecclesiastes is certainly in this yes, but there is a limit to where Ecclesiastes can take us. There is darkness and gloom and whirlwind that comes from Ecclesiastes, but you can't live on that. And God has not said that's what we live on. That's not our diet. Our diet is on building something for his glory. Fill the earth and subdue it. Like, there's work to be done. And so Ecclesiastes, there is a limit to the middle-aged critic of Ecclesiastes. Uncle Koheleth is going to have to sit down at some point. And if you can imagine what this book is, it's like Proverbs and Ecclesiastes showing up at Thanksgiving dinner and just having it out at the dinner table. Some of you guys, like, that's how my Thanksgiving sounds like anyway with all my relatives, right? You have different people showing up, and they just have different takes on all of this. Ecclesiastes only survives on the critique of conventional wisdom. And there is skepticism that we should have about answers to life questions on bumper stickers and Hobby Lobby decorations. We should have some questions about that. We should have some criticism about that. At the same time, we do need to build some things, and we do need to come strong with what God has brought for us. We're going to look a little bit more in depth next week, but I want to, as we move towards the end, having the end in mind as we look at Ecclesiastes, turn back to chapter 12. I want to say a couple things about this and how Ecclesiastes might help us. In chapter 12, verse 11, Ecclesiastes talks about, as a critic, what is he trying to do with this book? And this is what he says, what the author says. The words of the wise are like goads. Goads are, not goats, goads. Goads are long sticks with pointy ends. And shepherds would use goads to poke their sheep into a direction. And you would have, if you had flocks, you would use these goads and you would poke them into a direction. The words of the wise are like goads, and like nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings. They are given by one shepherd. My son, be aware of anything beyond these, of making many books there is no end, and much study is the weariness of the flesh. And then at the very end, this is what he says. The end of the matter. All has been heard. This is it. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment and every secret thing, whether good or evil. At the end of all things, in spite of saying, I mean, what is the word for Hevel? Fleeting, all is fleeting. Meaningless, all is meaningless. Fear God. Keep his commandments. Even though these things appear, and they have, there's a mysterious beauty about them for a while, and they disappear, God takes note of them all. Even though for us, we might pass and not be remembered, and generations might go by, and it passes over and over and over again, and people are forgotten, but mountains stand, whatever that is, but God at the very end, God will see every deed and everything, every secret thing, whether good or evil, and he will recognize what it is. Nothing outlasts God. And one of the things that we're going to see is that in the book of the one thing that is not Hevel, fleeting, is what God has put in the heart of humans, which is eternity. That there is something enduring. We see it in what God has done in his creation of us, that there is something. We're surrounded by Hevel, but there's something eternal that he has put in each of us. And what we're going to see as we move into the next week, and as we look at this, we're going to see the idea and how God uses the things that are fleeting, that are mysterious and beautiful, but gone the next moment, how he can use those things to point us towards our Creator. I'm going to invite the worship team to come on up. And as we finish this time out, I just want you to think a little bit about maybe something in your life. That idea of breath on a cold day, that image. And maybe you have an image of that for yourself. You're breathing out on a cold day, you can see your breath, and then it disappears. But maybe there's something that you just have experienced, like whether that is something in your life that you've seen as beautiful and you just want to recognize it as beautiful even though it's gone. I think even as I'm reflecting on my fourth, fifth, and sixth grade years of riding my bike, I just was thinking like how formative that was. Those days are gone. They're not even here for my kids. Like, I don't have any kids that are in fourth, fifth, or sixth grade. Beautiful, but they're gone. And I think as we kind of go into this last song, to just have something in mind that you just want to thank God for that. There's a beauty and a mystery to those things, to those days, to those memories. There's a beauty and a mystery to it. And things don't last forever. Boy, we're reminded of that. But as we do, we can at least lean onto the beauty and the mystery and the God who has given us the gift of whatever it is for that time. And let's just spend some time thanking him for that gift. Father, we come today, and maybe there's something we miss. Maybe there's something that comes to mind with this. Maybe there's something you want to bring to mind. And we just want to say, we affirm that the things of this life that are not you are Hevel. They are here today, they are gone tomorrow. While they are here, they are mysterious and beautiful. And when they are gone, they are in your hand. And so are we, Father. We are in your hand.